Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A slew of teen suicides last fall riveted the nation's attention on the struggles of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. In middle and high schools, homophobia and anti-gay bullying has peaked to form a painful, or peaks at that age to form a painful and isolated, even ostracized existence for many gay teens. Today, we're going to meet some of the people who are working to challenge that homophobia and that bullying atmosphere. The most recognizable campaign is the It Gets Better YouTube page. Coming up later, we'll hear from Ohio's It Gets Better representative, Dwayne Stewart. We'll also meet Glenn Zermanio, who directs a program aimed at supporting lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. Right now, we welcome OSU social work professor Susan Salzberg. Susan was one of a group of co-founders of the first and only existing statewide network of alliances of LGBTQ youth in the state of Massachusetts in the early 1990s, and she has remained involved with both clinical and advocacy work in the LGBTQ youth community. Dr. Salzberg's area of research are family response and adjustment to children coming out as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
You've been working in this field for more than two decades now.
Yes, I have.
Well, more than. And I was wondering what have been the biggest breakthroughs, but you warned me that some things have changed and some things haven't.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the kind of breakthroughs for me are through the social discourse that surrounds all of our lives, changes in that when I was a youth, there were very few images of LGBTQ people. So when one look out into the world, they wouldn't see their own reflection very much. And so I think that's been a big change. I think the fact that Q can stand for questioning, but it can also stand for queer youth now. I think youth are beginning to deconstruct some of the labels that our social discourse has given them. I think that there are many new laws and policies advocating for LGBTQ rights. But honestly, I think as much that has changed, there's still a great deal that hasn't changed. And I think we still have young people growing up in a world which is very heterosexist and very homonegative. And when they grow up and they're surrounded by that, it creates tremendous stress and pressure for them. I think they still have to face prejudice. And I think for many of our youth, what they're facing is not just one form of minority oppression, but multiple forms. So I think we've made great headway, but there's a long way to go. LGBTQ people and youth are being acknowledged and embraced in some circles, and in some circles, not so much. And we still have youth that are committing suicide, and a lot of that suicide has to do with rejection, a sense of not mattering, a sense of victimization. And I think particularly when you introduce the program with the It Gets Better campaign, I think that was the work and the inspiration of two men who drew from their hearts and their life experiences and had a message that they wanted to give to the world. But I think we have to be very careful in that message. And the reason we have to be cautious and careful in that message is that while it does get better, we're talking about youth. We're not talking about adults. And so we're talking about the vicissitudes of adolescence growth and development, and we're talking about the developmental tasks of adolescence, and we're talking about coping capacity and emotional coping capacity. And when we're talking about that with youth, the responsibility should not be on the youth to have to wait for it to get better.
My guest is Susan, OSU social work professor Susan Salzberg. I was surprised when I was preparing for this, and I remember reading about the kids who committed suicide last fall when it seemed like there was a surge. And I was surprised when I was looking closer that one of those kids had come out to his parents. But it was, so it wasn't his parents. It wasn't that proverbial fear of rejection from the family. It was his community at his school that drove him to it in that case. So when you bring up that issue about, we're still talking about kids and saying things get better has a very different meaning for them.
Yes, it does.
How do you talk to kids when you're working with them, and what kind of semantics do you use with them?
Well, for me, if I can separate my two roles as a scholar and a researcher in academia, and then 25, 30 years as a family therapist and clinician, the work looks a little bit different. I think one of the roles of youth workers and clinicians working with LGBTQ youth is to, first of all, help them embrace who they are, but also help them understand what it means to live in our heterosexist, homonegative world. Not to be afraid to talk about that, because as you begin to talk about that, it begins to kind of contextualize and normalize their experience and make them become aware that you, in some ways what you're doing, you are externalizing the heterosexism and homophobia. You're taking it out from them. You're placing it in the larger social environment, and you're helping frame in place the responsibility for any victimization they're feeling in the larger environment. And yes, school bullying is a huge issue. It's a issue for LGBTQ youth, but it's also an issue for many other youth. And the responsibility for that, the children are not born with prejudice. They are not born wanting to victimize and hurt other children. And so the trickle-down effects of societal heterosexism and homonegativity is the responsibility. It's kind of where the children are drawing the acts and the thoughts and the language they use. And so in order coming up with wonderful interventions in schools is very, very important. In fact, our most, Dr. Tamara Davis and I from Ohio State University College of Social Work, our most recent research with both kids from Kaleidoscope but also kids from Massachusetts, which is an interesting two groups to compare, because one comes from a very progressive state in terms of the rights of LGBTQ people. And then we have the kids growing up in Ohio, which particularly around the gay marriage issue has one of the most difficult and challenging wordings of how people can come together as GLBTQ couples. But with those two different states, we expected to find a huge difference in how young people were talking about their experience, particularly at school. And we didn't hear a huge difference. And what we heard from them all is, when we asked them, what do you need from your community to help you develop and feel well in a social and emotional way, all the children, all the young adolescents, all the young adults unanimously said, we need the adults in our lives to stand up for us. We need them to tell us we matter. We need them to protect us. And we need it not just in the schools. We need it in every pathway of our lives.
What form might that take when we talk about adults showing support for a kid, you know, LGBTQ kid these days? How would that manifest itself?
Well, it might look slightly different in the schools or in the home or in the youth centers, and not necessarily just LGBTQ youth centers and all youth centers. Mm-hmm. Kids need to see themselves visible. So who they are and what they are needs to be normalized. LGBTQ kids are like any other kids. They come into this world. They like to play. They like to sing. They like to dance. They like to have fun. They like to express themselves. So letting kids know that who they are and how they express themselves is a normative part of being a human being, and that's great. Kids at school need to know that they are safe, that if there are jokes or there are comments or there is any kind of hostility or harassment, that people will step forward in the moment and do something about it. Kids need to know that who they are needs not to be allocated to the nurse or the counseling office, that if you're having events for LGBTQ kids, if you're talking about their issues, it needs to be out on the bulletin boards where everybody else's stuff is out there. Being LGBTQ has nothing to do with any kind of pathology or any kind of deviance. It's just another normative variation of human existence. So we need to normalize it for these kids. We need to embrace them. And we need to, in 2011 and moving forward, recognize that people are people. That is the bottom line.
Do you see things changing in people? Well, there was an interesting article about religious colleges and universities that are seeing an uptick in the number of students coming out, wanting to form gay-straight alliances and that sort of thing on campus and campus groups in general. And some of the university and college administrations are letting them go forward with those plans. Others are fighting it. But what is clear is to some people that attitudes are changing, that if these kids are coming out at that point in their lives, in spite of the institutional opposition to it, that things must be changing and that bodes well for the future and that's where it'll have to happen.
And I would agree with that, and I think probably for LGBTQ youth, one of the biggest advances and changes is that we have the internet. Kids don't have to live in isolation anymore. Even kids who live in rural areas, kids whose parents kind of hover over over their lives and what they're doing, they have a way to reach out. But I think we still need to recognize that it has only been 2 years, and I'm sure there are many cases I don't know about being in academia, but it's only 2 years in the Columbus area that we lost a youth to suicide. We are still having kids commit suicide all over the world and the country, and that comes out of being socially isolated, being marginalized, being victimized. LGBTQ kids are not born with any kind of mental disorder. There is no proclivity for depression or anxiety or PTSD any more than anyone else, except that their life circumstances often create those situations. So we do see a higher percentage of youth suicides. We often see a higher percentage of PTSD. If you've got kids living on the streets because they can't live in their home and violence happens on the streets, then these kids will be affected by it.
We have to take a break. Susan Salzberg is going to join us later in the hour. She's an OSU social work professor. Coming up, we'll be hearing from a couple other voices in the community. If you want to stay with us, please do. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And on our new webpage, wosu.org/allsides, you can do the Facebook chat right there now. So how convenient is that? wosu.org/allsides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to check out the Chefs in the City Baker's Dozen. You can bid now on 13 of the most sought-after Chefs in the City silent auction packages, even if you don't have a ticket to the event. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to view all 13 items up for bid, like our featured package, the Napa Valley Wine Country Experience. But hurry, bidding closes at 4 p.m. on April 21st. Visit WOSU.org/chefs.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts, presenting the lecture Understanding the Speech That Transformed a Nation with Martin Luther King Jr. speechwriter Clarence Jones, Wednesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. Details at mccoycenter.org.
And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus, steady temperatures right around 50 throughout the day, and a little breezy with wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Clouds tonight and a low of 37. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
That's not what I meant.
I know what you meant. What, you think I didn't use that word when I was your age? You know, some kid gets clocked in practice. We tell him, stop being such a fag. Shake it off. We meant it exactly the way you meant it. That being gay is wrong. That's some kind of punishable offense. I really thought you were different, Finn.
Welcome back. That's a scene from the acclaimed television series Glee. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Joining us now is Dwayne Steward. Dwayne is a freelance journalist and gay rights activist working and living in Delaware. He's been involved with Act Out Delaware, the Columbus AIDS Task Force, and the Kaleidoscope Youth Center. That's an organization that focuses on providing a safe space for gay youth in Central Ohio. Dwayne is the sole representative from Ohio featured in the book It Gets Better, Coming Out, Overcoming Bullying, and Creating a Life Worth Living by Dan Savage and Terry Miller. Welcome to the show, Dwayne.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Glenn Zermanio. Glenn is a licensed social worker and the program director at Kaleidoscope Youth Center. He has worked with LGBTQ youth since 1999 in New York City at the Hedrick Martin Institute, home of the Harvey Milk High School, among others. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Thank you.
We were just listening to a scene from episode 20, season one of Glee, in which Bert Hummel, the father of the gay character Kurt, lambasts Finn for his language toward Kurt. Glee has been lauded as the first show not about LGBT to address it so sensitively, especially regarding youth. And how valuable are those messages now in the mass media, Dwayne?
I think they're extremely valuable. You know, one thing that kids deal with in high school who are LGBT is the fact that they feel like they're the only ones in their high school or in, you know, really in the world, because obviously kids have a very small perspective. They just think, you know, the life that they're living is the only life that's available and out there. And when you see kids on Glee or other mainstream shows like 90210, kids can identify with that, and it does definitely help their situations, I think.
When you were growing up, when you were a teenager, what was out there for you, Dwayne?
When I was a kid, I just really only remember Will and Grace, really. And I definitely didn't really identify with the characters on that show. But it did help to see that they were living normal lives, that and that it was okay for them, that I wasn't, you know, quote unquote, the only one.
When I was reading the post from the It Gets Better YouTube page, there were some from obviously struggling teens, and one girl in particular sounded suicidal, clearly. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what, you know, you want to tap some words in there and say, that's okay, call Kaleidoscope or something, but how are you reaching out, Glenn, to reach these kids?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Kaleidoscope, we offer a space for youth to come and to have a place to connect with other youth, to have a normal teenage experience, right? So youth come to the center, and when they get there, it's sort of the playing field is sort of leveled because they all share the same sexual orientation, right, or within that range. And so then they get to deal with other things that around being a teenager, like dating, like family, like school, all these things. So just one, you know, creating a space where youth can be themselves, LGBT youth can be teenagers, is one way. Other things that we do is we offer trainings in schools about how to make schools more inclusive for everyone, to raise awareness about the issues that LGBT youth are struggling with. So teaching and working with faculty and staff, we also do that with local other community-based organizations. So, yeah.
Katie in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for taking my call, Anne, and I really appreciate the topic that you guys are discussing this morning. I just wanted to make a quick point. I think it's really interesting that the first portion of the program was about, you know, a state being quote-unquote cool, and the second portion of the program is about accepting, you know, the gay youth in our community. I think the two go hand in hand. I think it's very hard to have a cool community that's not open-minded, and I think a huge part of being open-minded, especially in today's day and age, is accepting the gay and lesbian people in our community, because they contribute so much, and it, you know, they have a struggle. You know, they have a lot that they're going through, and they need help. And it's, I think it just behooves us as a society to not provide them with that support and that help. And also, I wanted to make a comment. You had someone on the other day that was talking about the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream speech. And when you listen to programs like that, you think, God, you know, what if I was around back in the 50s and 60s when all this civil rights stuff was going on, and I would have been marching, and I would have been, you know, helping these kids, you know, and, you know, you've got children trying to get into schools and dogs barking at their heels. And, you know, you think, you know, what if I could have made a difference then? Well, people can now. It's the exact same thing. It's just gay and lesbians that aren't getting a fair shake. You know, rather than blacks, it's homosexuals. And we have the opportunity right now to make a stand and to help, these people that are in our community that we should be helping. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point. I really appreciate you guys talking about the issue that you're talking about today.
Susan, did you want to
respond? I did want to respond. That was a wonderful phone call, wonderful observations. And I wanted, if people are unaware, that on, I could have the date wrong, but in early May, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights is going to work with its first case having to do with civil rights with LGBTQ student violence. And so it's the first time that this commission has taken an issue around students and violence, particularly LGBTQ students, going to examine it and going to come up with policies around it. And so this is a time of demonstrating and supporting the civil rights of the people of our country. So that was a wonderful phone call and a wonderful observation.
Thank you, Katie. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. And you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our webpage as well at wosu.org/allsides and post Facebook comments and questions there. Getting back to that Glee, that segment from Glee that we heard earlier, clearly one of the most poignant things about it is that it's his dad saying this. And I was wondering how critical that remains for gay youth. Outside of the family, there's more resources. There's places like Kaleidoscope. But if they're not getting it at home, if they're not getting the support at home, how much is that undercut the efforts that you make, Glenn?
Mm-hmm. I think it's profound. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things that in some of the trainings that we do, many of the faculty at schools are parents, and so they'll sometimes say, you know, it's just really hard. You know, it's really hard to have a young person where you have a child where you have expectations and you have dreams for them and you find out something else. And so, you know, one of the things that's important, I think, for parents to recognize is that they have a process, too. There's a process of learning. There is a process of loss. Like, if you have an expectation, if you have this idea of who your child is going to be and they turn out to be something different, then you have to renegotiate, you know, your thinking around who they are. So I think parents need to do some work. I think that's part of it. I think one of the things that's most powerful and impactful about Glee, it's great to have, you know, visible, positive LGBT characters, but to have a parent who stands up and who speaks out for their effeminate gay son, who is like this dude, like this, you know, this really masculine guy, like that's really powerful. And, you know, I think that it can even give language to parents and give an example, you know, for parents to be able to do that. I think that's what's largely missing. It's really incredibly important to have representations, positive representations of LGBT people, but to also have positive representations of parents of LGBT people.
Dwayne, I mentioned earlier that you're the sole representative from Ohio featured in the book It Gets Better, Coming Out, Overcoming Bullying, and Creating a Life Worth Living by Dan Savage and Terry Miller. I was wondering if you would read to us from an excerpt from your essay about growing up in Delaware, Ohio.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Delaware, Ohio, a small rural town just outside of Columbus, and I was picked on mercilessly in junior high and high school for acting feminine. I was called a faggot on a regular basis. I was called a lot of things on a regular basis. Every derogatory name used for gays was at some point directed at me. My parents are also extremely religious. My father is a Pentecostal minister, so I had to deal with bigotry at home as well. All of this, of course, made coming out extremely difficult. I was in church every week hearing the pastor preach that gays are going to hell. There was even a rumor started that I was fornicating with another member of the church and we were infecting each other and those around us with AIDS. It was pretty bad. I dealt with a lot of inner turmoil and self-hatred for a very long time. Even though things were getting bad, were pretty bad growing up, the great thing about high school is it doesn't last forever. After I graduated, I went to Ohio University, a school that's extremely open and accepting of anybody and anyone. I met a remarkable group of friends who I still keep in touch with. I came out in college and was even part of starting an amazing support group for LGBT people of color there called Shades, the first of its kind at OU. I moved back to Delaware recently, and it has dawned on me how important leaving was. I was able to discover people who were just like me and live a life that was void of any hatred. That experience made me stronger, a stronger person, and gave me the ability to confront the stereotypes and bigotry that used to go on here all the time. And Delaware has changed some too. There are LGBT groups now where that never could have existed when I was growing up here. So sometimes it just takes time.
Thank you. You can read the entire essay on your webpage.
Yeah, at DuaneStewart.com. Or you can also go, if you want to buy the book, you can go to itgetsbetter.org and you can buy the book. You can also donate the book to a local library or school library at a school as well.
Your situation was sort of the perfect storm in a way, mm-hmm. of color. Dad's a Pentecostal minister, and you're gay.
Mm-hmm.
How did your parents react? How did it work out with them?
My parents, they are extremely religious, and it's not a lifestyle they agree with. I consider, the relationship I have with my parents as, something that's, a work in progress, or it's a process that's, I think, going to continue for quite some time.
I think it's the rest of your life.
Right.
or theirs.
So it's always just about...
It's true for everybody is
right.
the point.
It's all about just basically when you are an LGBT person, it's basically always about, continuing to educate your parents just about your lifestyle, about, the world around them, how the world thinks about your lifestyle, and different basically always keeping them aware that you are equal, your lifestyle isn't something that's wrong and horrible. So it's just always kind of making sure you continue those conversations and because if you can continually talk about it, that's when you start changing minds.
There are, Glenn and Dwayne, there are issues surrounding people of color who are gay and lesbian and transgender. What are they? Tell us about how things stand these days, Glenn, particularly among the kids that you work with at Kaleidoscope.
Yeah. We largely the population that we see is largely youth of color, and I think many of them are struggling within their communities around a number of issues. I mean, we have a lot of youth who are coming just trying to get basic needs met, and so that's one sort of issue for them is that they're trying to survive, and then they have this sort of added layer of oppression that they're struggling with. Coming from communities that have a history of being oppressed as people of color, then having to deal with the next, this next layer. I don't have a good quick answer for how to address that, but it is definitely something that we see a lot of. And just having a space where youth can connect around those issues and hear from each other how they navigate that stuff, I think is really powerful for them.
Susan, did you want to?
Yeah, I would, when I think about youth, I think one of the really important things for all of us to remember is that 20, 30, 40, I can speak to myself, years ago when you come out in your adult years because you had to either keep it hidden when you were younger or you didn't have the language for it, you have the opportunity as an adult to create family outside of your family if you need to in order to get you kind of through the coming out experience and through parents' adjustment period. You get to relocate if that's what will help you. You have many more kind of grown-up opportunities that you get to do to help you, but we have to remember with kids that there's this really small window of when they're feeling desperate and when they're fearing rejection and when parents are kind of traveling through their journey of adjustment. And kids can't always wait for the parents to adjust. Some kids do it better than others, and some of that research shows us has to do with protective factors in their life, some of those protective factors coming from within their own constitution and some from support networks. But when you have children who are feeling victimized and are fearful based on what their world experience tells them about the treatment of LGBTQ people, and when their deepest fear is the people that they need in their lives to protect them may in some way reject them or be disappointed in them, kids become desperate. That's a very vulnerable, important time in young people's lives. And one of the things I've learned in my 25 or 30 years of family therapy, particularly with kids coming out to their families, is it sometimes takes an outside professional to help the family get through the experience. And it sometimes is not safe for all kids to come out to their families, and we have to recognize and pay attention to that. And I'd actually would like to hear both of the gentlemen that are with us today talk about that a little bit. When might it not be safe, and how would you deal with kids?
Glenn?
Yeah, we, you know, at Kaleidoscope, one of the things that we do talk with youth about, you know, when they come to us around, you know, wanting to come out or how do I come out to my parents, you know, part of the conversation is it safe? Like, is now the time? You know, we actually have a little packet that we'll sometimes go through with some of the youth to kind of get a sense of, you know, who is a safe person in your family if when you come out you don't get the, you know, the outcome that you want, you're rejected, or will there be violence as a result of this? And so often, like, creating a safety plan for them in advance and often talking about this might not be the time. It might have to be, you know, figuring out how to manage the situation, which is not ideal if a parent isn't going to be supportive until you're in a place where you're safe to be able to come out. For some people, it could be a year. It could be, you know, until they're an adult. So we definitely have some very intentional conversations around that.
Dwayne Stewart, how did you decide the time was right to come out to your parents?
Well, I didn't come out to my parents until I was 21. So I was an adult. And it was basically because, you know, in high school, you know, I saw kids that came out and they were, you know, relentlessly bullied and they didn't get the response they wanted. And I knew just being in church and hearing them preach that, you know, you gays are going to hell and having that extra layer at church and, you know, all of that, I was like, no, I'm not coming out at all. You know, I had those huge fears that, you know, my parents are going to pick me out and things like that. So I definitely didn't feel safe as a kid, definitely coming out.
Did you have those moments of desperation, though, that when do you remember that window of desperation in your childhood when you really felt like there was no alternatives for you that Susan was mentioning earlier?
Right. I don't think I ever, I never contemplated suicide as a kid. And that was mainly because I had an amazing, you know, group of friends in high school. And I think that's the message that is, you know, the It Gets Better Project and other organizations are sending out, that, you know, kids have to kind of actively find their support systems. I had, like I said, amazing group of friends. I had shoulders to cry on. I had people to talk to whenever I was going through something difficult, or whenever I was, you know, thrown into a locker or called a faggot or whatever the case may have been. And I think that's extremely important. I think also with, you know, the parent side, what people need to understand is, you know, the research shows that LGBT teens are 4 times more likely to commit suicide than straight teens. And if their families reject them, they're 8 times more likely. So I think parents and families need to understand that their reactions do have consequences, and they have to be cognizant of that.
We have to take another break. When we return, we'll continue the conversation with Dwayne Stewart. He's the sole representative from Ohio featured in the book It Gets Better, Coming Out, Overcoming Bullying, and Creating a Life Worth Living by Dan Savage and Terry Miller. And also Glenn Zermanio. He is he's program director at the Kaleidoscope Youth Center, and OSU social work professor Susan Salzberg. So we'll get to those calls. Hang in there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Werner Herzog talks about his new 3D documentary about a cave in France with 30,000-year-old cave paintings.
The cave is so beautiful. It's like crystal cathedrals and stalactites and stalagmites, and facing the paintings, it's just sheer awe.
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon here on 89.7 NPR News. WOSU and Slow Food Columbus present the Chefs in the City 2011 book signing with Chef Jacques Pepin at the North Market tomorrow at 4 p.m. Visit WOSU.org/chefs for virtual tickets and for more information.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies today, and steady temperatures right around 50 throughout the day. Also breezy conditions with wind gusts of up to 30 miles per hour at times. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 37 degrees. Some sunshine for Thursday and a high of 60. There's a chance of rain Thursday night, a low of 39. And then showers and thunderstorms are likely for Friday and a high of 60. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. That was Christina Aguilera's Beautiful, as sung collaboratively by the Columbus Children's Chorus and the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. This musical number was a Columbus contribution to the It Gets Better project. We're talking today about how we should address anti-gay bullying and challenge homophobia in our schools and culture. Joining us is OSU social work professor Susan Salzberg. Thanks again, Susan, for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Also, Ohio's It Gets Better representative, Dwayne Stewart. Dwayne, thanks again for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And also Kaleidoscope Youth Center Program Director, Glenn Zermanio. Glenn, thanks again.
Glad to be here.
Let's get to some calls now. Joe in Southern Indiana, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Mm-hmm. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I got to say, I have no problem with people that are gay. I don't believe it's a choice. I believe that they're just born that way. I'm straight. But what I think is the issue with the bullying and stuff in school, I wouldn't say, oh, kids will be kids, but it happens to everybody. And I'm sure it happens to gay and lesbians more than it happens to short or fat or freckled kids or whatever, but you know, it happens to everybody. And I think, you know, we're forgetting that today is the anniversary. Isn't it the anniversary of Columbine?
You know, I didn't even know that, yeah. Joe. Thanks.
I'm pretty sure it is. Mm-hmm. And I know it's the anniversary of some school shooting. And anyways, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold weren't gay. They were just picked on. And instead of just shooting themselves, they went to their school with submachine guns and assault rifles and killed as many people as they could. And I think that's a pretty big issue. And what does it come down to? It comes down to bullying. It doesn't have anything to do with anything other than just bullying. And what's the reason for the bullying? Well, kids will find a weakness or they'll find something different. It doesn't matter if it's the style of your hair or the clothes that you wear or what sex you prefer to, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just that kids are bullies. And the whole issue of homosexuality or playing too many video games, whatever, it's just it misses the point. We have to educate kids to just to be friendly and tolerant and accepting of each other and accepting of all differences. Differences in race, differences in the types of music that they listen to. I mean, there are kids that get shot over what color shirt they wear.
So you're saying if we could just get at that overall culture of bullying, we could address as well the ancillary benefit would be LGBT kids.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it would benefit anybody. The problem is that LGBTQ kids are bullied, and they're committing suicide, right? I don't Does anyone know the offhand number of how many suicides happened last year?
Well, there's not any strict, because it's not something that's reported, right, Susan?
That's right, but we certainly know of six definitely LGBTQ young people who committed suicide. And those six, it happened in a very short period. There were four other young people that committed suicide at around the same time, and it is believed that they were victimized and that they were LGBTQ as well.
So, Dwayne, Glenn, any thoughts about what Joe just said?
Well, I think that all kids are bullied, and that's definitely something that needs to be addressed. But when you have those staggering statistics of four times, you know, LGBT kids being four times more likely to commit suicide, it's almost an epidemic. And so that I think that it's definitely – we definitely need to address bullying on all levels. But when we see, you know, kids killing themselves as a result, you definitely need to combat it on a different level, take a different approach and a more direct approach.
Glenn?
Yeah, I think, yes, bullying is definitely an issue. I think the bigger issue is responding to bullying, right? So young people bully each other. There's always going to be something that makes someone stand out. And I think that the messages that we get from the moment we're born is that difference is not okay. I think that we're born into a society that says that there's a binary system, that you're male or female, you're gay or straight, you're good or bad. They're set up that way. And so, you know, one of the things that we talk a lot about at Kaleidoscope is recognizing that those binaries actually operate on a continuum, right? There's a spectrum. Those are endpoints, and that it's possible to move between those places, and there's possible different ways to identify between it, so that it doesn't set up this idea that you're either good or you're bad. And so I just think, you know, we're born and we're into a world that says being heterosexual is the normal. That's right. You're supposed to – there's this process that you go through. You get married. You have kids. It's happy family.
Okay. Thanks, Sho, in Southern Indiana for that call. We appreciate it. John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, Ann. Thank you very much. And thank you, all of your guests, your speakers, Susan, Glenn, Dwayne. I think you're doing a tremendous job with this whole subject matter, and the more this kind of information is out there, the better our whole society will be. I'm kind of getting to be a dinosaur. I'm a 60-year-old straight man who has three children and a gay brother and a gay sister, and we handled the subject matter way back in the dark ages in the 60s, and the family had a tremendous struggle with it in a time when no one really knew anything about anything, even sexuality, period. And I'm blown away by the information that's out there today, and the mindset of today's young kids, teenagers and early 20s. I go over to Columbus State every semester to give a little talk about what it's like to grow up in a household with gay siblings. And I'm almost feeling like I'm preaching to the choir with what I'm running into with these young kids today. They're very progressive and full of information, and it's just very, very, such a positive situation.
You know, John, you make me wonder about how life would have been different if there'd been things like YouTube, if there'd been things like the Internet. What do you think, John?
Absolutely. It's just a deluge of good information that's just come about just the last few years. And you couldn't get a young straight man to even look at you twice about the subject of homosexuality just a very few years ago. Today, many of these young guys know something, and they have an opinion one way or the other, and they're more open-minded than ever before. I used to dream about that day when you could get someone to drop their religious prejudices or their own thought-out natural selection ideas, you know, and try to be open-minded and think in much more general terms. And they exist today.
Thank you very much, John, for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Continue on.
Thank you. So the siblings, how important, Susan?
Siblings, very, very important. And I think often siblings are the first people that LGBTQ youth come out to. That isn't true all the time, but it's obviously very important. And it's wonderful to hear John talk and to hear about his recognition of the changes that have taken place. I want to be sure to not be the voice of doom and gloom. I actually, what I want to say is that the narratives of LGBT youth today have transitioned from narratives of struggle and survival to narratives of emancipation and narratives of celebration. And I want to be sure that those images are the ones that we leave with people. I just, for those of us who are clinicians and doing clinical work, we tend to see the other kids, the kids who are struggling, and we want to be sure not to forget them.
Duane, growing up, did you have brothers and sisters who that you were out with? And what was that relationship like?
Actually, one of my sisters is also gay, and I have three other siblings. I have a sister who's gay. I have another sister who's straight, and I have an older brother who's straight. But it was actually their support was definitely helpful and definitely encouraging. When I didn't come out to my brother until I was 19-ish, but you know, his response wasn't what I was expecting. He said, you know, because he would pick on me when I was a kid for being, you know, a sissy, quote unquote, and he kind of broke down and apologized and was like, I didn't know and I'm sorry. And he's been a fierce advocate since I came out to him. And my other sister, she has two, and she has two kids, and she, you know, always tells me that, you know, they're going to be okay with you being gay. That's not going to be a problem, Duane. So, you know, definitely the support of the siblings is very important.
I have an email from Brian, and then I want to get to a call that relates to this email. This is from Brian in Columbus. He writes, "While I am happy to see your guest encouraging young GLBT teens to be strong and to hold on to life, I am really offended that they also seem to say that these same GLBT youth should just put up with all the hazing and bullying because one day it will get better. I would like to see more of the focus put on the aggressors and those that are doing the bullying." And I guess, you know, maybe you want to respond to that, Glenn.
Yeah. Oh, that is absolutely not what I would say. It is never a young person's responsibility to navigate bullying and to wait it out and to defend themselves. Their job is to figure out who they are, to have a safe way to do it, to be safe in doing it so that they can develop into healthy, you know, adults in the world. Yes, I mean, bullying has to be addressed all the time in every situation, every context, and it's not always overt. You know, it can be the absence of inclusion, right?
Shunning,
right? Mm-hmm. Or not including information about LGBT identities in curriculum. You know, in conversation.
Let's get to this call. Mark in Newark, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Ann. Hey. First of all, let me say this. I'd like to apologize to OSU. I've always listened to you, but I never contributed when I had the money. And now that I don't, I just enjoy your show immensely so much more because of this time. But one thing I wanted to say was...
Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome. And when I was in third grade, I got picked on by the fifth grader, okay? And then when I became the fifth grader, I was able to pick on the third grader. So this is a progression. I mean, you know, when the sixth grader would pick on the third grader, you know, and you kind of step that stepping stone up, and that even goes to even being the last person picked on a team because you weren't the strong and able one, to being able to be in the middle of the pack being picked and being the one that did the picking for your team, you know. So it's just, I mean, I'm not trying to downplay anything, but you know what? When you're being picked on, you don't realize the power that someone has over you at that age. It's just you feel bad. And then once you become, you know, into more tune of yourself, and then you have that learned behavior. Mm-hmm. And then for me was, I seen the hurt on my best friend when he said, why ain't you picking me first, you know? And it just really changed things. This was like in the sixth grade, you know, that's when my attitude changed of being picked on and then being able to be the picker to actually having compassion for the lesser of, you know, or the ones that weren't, you know, that had the more passive, you know. And I remember, because there was an orphanage down here in Newark, that the first three black kids came into the school system down there, and the one was the all-star athlete, and the other one was gay. And I hung out with the guy that was gay because people were picking on him. You know, I became the protector more than the bully. You know, and it's just weird how, as childhood goes, how we learn on our own because we're afraid to ask our parents, we're afraid to go to our teachers because, you know, if you do, you're the snitch or you know, you get picked on even worse if you go asking questions or for help.
I guess, Mark, the moral, and thank you very much for your call and for listening, I guess kind of the moral of that story is you have to start these messages very young, Susan.
Absolutely. And we're not just talking about the bullying of children. We're talking about societal bullying of LGBTQ people and their lives. And so those messages are started from the time children are born. They hear them. They're socially constructed in their worlds, and we have to deconstruct them. It's our responsibility. And I absolutely want to be sure people are hearing where all three of us are coming from today, and that is it is never all right in any way to allow a child to be bullied or to expect children to have to protect themselves in this world. And that was one of my only concerns about the It Gets Better video is that it portrays that perhaps if children wait it out, if they can find a way to do that, it'll be all right. And our message is, as a society of adults who want to live in a world that loves their children, we need to step in. We need to intervene.
Dwayne?
Yeah, one thing that's important to understand is kids don't understand or see the effects of bullying. They don't see the kid going home and crying in their bedroom. They don't see, you know, what the anguish they're going through. And it is true what Susan was saying. And the people, myself, Dan Savage, people behind the It Gets Better Project, we understand that this is not all that needs to be done. This is just the beginning of what needs to be done. And myself, along with, you know, Kaleidoscope and Stonewall and the Wexner Center, we hosted an event just last week that was called How Do We Make It Better? And, you know, we had a discussion on with, you know, what we need to be doing to make LGBT kids safe now, because they shouldn't have to wait. And that's definitely the case. And I don't think that's the message that It Gets Better is sending out. I just think it's that kids, like I said, in that immediacy, and they, when they see 10,000 videos on YouTube that's, you know, put towards them, they immediately see that, yes, okay, it gets better. But while we're kind of working on making it better.
Working on the other stuff. Sorry to say, it's the end of the hour. I have to thank my guests, Susan Salzberg, OSU social work professor. Thank you, Susan, for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also, Dwayne Stewart, you can read Dwayne's work in It Gets Better, Coming Out, Overcoming Bullying, and Creating a Life Worth Living by Dan Savage and Terry Miller. Thanks a lot, Dwayne, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And also Glenn Zermanio. He is Program Director at Kaleidoscope Youth Center. Glenn, thanks again.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.